smile, our faces like a mirror, showing us our secret side. But then the fight, the sharp words splintering the night. How I couldn't be what you'd need, but oh, how I could make it.
Chapter 30. And all the devils are here.
I know the borderlines are true between us. Keep the weapons down, keep the wounded safe. I know our antebellum senses never meant to see the light of our armistice. But how much would I give to have it back again?
Obi-Wan. Both he and Ahsoka started as an indeterminate dark shape near one of the gently curving statues in the gallery, unfolded and became Quinlan Vos, much to the alarm of the ceremonial guard standing by the doorway. The woman began to step forward, but stopped as Obi-Wan waved her back.
"I'd forgotten that you did that," Obi-Wan said to Quinlan, as the Jedi Knight put back the hood of his winter cloak, which was trimmed with moth-eaten fur.
Ahsoka took her hand out from under her poncho, where she had started to reach for her lightsaber.
"Where's Ayla?"
Quinlan shook his head, his expression grim.
"Didn't come."
There wasn't much that Obi-Wan could say to that, except, "I'm sorry." Quinlan made a graceless gesture with a hand whose nails had been bitten to the quick, and said,
"Not your fault. I shouldn't have assumed. I should have prepared for... Anyway, what did I miss?"
He squinted at Obi-Wan.
"What happened to your face?"
Obi-Wan touched the bruise on his cheek self-consciously.
"Sparring with my counterpart."
Quinlan's eyebrows shot up as he fell into step on Obi-Wan's right side. The three of them made their way across the gallery towards the double doors on the opposite side, their boots sounding heavily on the floor, which was made out of some kind of marble-like stone Obi-Wan couldn't remember the name of.
"And he hit you in the face?" Quinlan said, fascinated.
"Well, I also hit him in the face," Obi-Wan had to say, "amongst other places." Quinlan snorted.
"That must have made a fun show."
"It was pretty impressive," Ahsoka put in.
Obi-Wan rolled his eyes, rubbing a hand over his jaw.
"I suppose it must have looked that way to a spectator," he said.
"Wish I'd seen it," Quinlan said thoughtfully.
He slanted a look at Obi-Wan and added,
"I haven't seen you fight in 5 years, since that time on Tatooine."
"You had to remind me," Obi-Wan sighed. They had run into each other on Mos Eisley when they had both been staking out the same arms deal, which had been presided over by Jabba the Hutt. It had gone badly. Obi-Wan still wasn't sure which of the two of them had been recognized. He started to say something to that extent, but the name Tatooine had touched off a memory. Something Quinlan had said before, back on Paladin.
Obi-Wan stopped dead, catching Quinlan's arm.
"Skywalker." Quinlan swung around to stare at him.
"What?"
"I thought I'd heard that name before. It was you."
"The knight from the other universe?"
"Not him," Obi-Wan said. "The one from this universe. Anakin. Annie. You mentioned him once." Quinlan blinked once, then said slowly,
"Yeah, he's a feral. A smuggler, I think. The Council's got a capture or kill order on him because he managed to get the drop on Eth once." "Why?"
"He's here," Ahsoka said, when Obi-Wan didn't respond immediately. There was something in the Force. A spark." She frowned at Obi-Wan.
"More than a spark, for them." "Sounds like a romance for the centuries,"
Quinlan said. What's some Rimworld smuggler doing here? Padme hired him to fly her off Naboo, since she figured no one would be looking for a... junker, Ahsoka put in helpfully. Light freighter, Obi-Wan said, more diplomatically, rather than the Royal Starship. They started walking again, passing more palace guards stationed at regular intervals in the corridors. The Organas didn't usually make their security this overt, but Obi-Wan supposed that they were feeling more cautious than was their wont under the current circumstances. Obi-Wan couldn't blame them. "So the Feral's here," Quinlan said eventually. "And you're here. And Queen Amidala. And the three of them from the other universe, too. Well, that's a little odd, isn't it?" "To be honest, it's rather far down on the list of things I'm attempting not to think about, because if I do, they'll upset me," Obi-Wan said. He shoved his hands into the pocket of his overcoat, even though it was warm enough that it wasn't really necessary inside, and was, in fact, rather too hot. He could still feel the Force singing in his veins. Obi-Wan had been born to be a Jedi Knight, even if he hadn't been one of the handful of younglings born in the temple every year. He had been one of the rare younglings that had come to the Order as an infant of only a few days. The hospital on Chandrilla, where he had been born, had tested his midichlorian count as a matter of course, and reported the results to the Jedi Master who had been on world, mediating a conflict between the Chandrillan Great Houses and the planet's protectorate moons. Obi-Wan's birth family hadn't been Chandrillan, but they had been citizens of the Republic. They had been cognizant of the great honor of giving a child to the Order, and had decided to entrust him to the Jedi immediately, rather than waiting a year or two, the way most families did. Obi-Wan had never met them. The only family he had ever had was the Order first, and Padme later. But he knew the Force better than he knew his own heartbeat, had been aware of it before he even knew his own name, and he had never felt the Force before the way he felt it now. It was as though a key had clicked inside a lock. He wondered if Anakin Skywalker felt the same way, if he even understood how he was feeling or what it was. For that matter, Obi-Wan wasn't sure what it was, except for the whisper that said, "This man, this is how it's supposed to be." He blinked as Quinlan poked him in the arm.
"What?" "You're right. You went away there for a moment."
"I was just thinking." Obi-Wan pushed a hand back through his hair.
"Haven't you done more than enough of that lately?"
Quinlan's voice was light, though he still felt weary in the Force.
"I'm pretty sure you've had the time."
"Thinking about something else," Obi-Wan sighed. He wanted to ask another Jedi what it meant, but he wasn't sure that Quinlan was the Jedi he should be asking, or even Luminara. Who he wanted to talk to was a Master, but he knew that Eeth Koth wouldn't talk to him, and Plo Koon was out of reach for the time being. "A Master."
"Well, that was one option."
"Obi-Wan..." Quinlan hesitated long enough that Obi-Wan turned towards him.
"What is it?"
"Amidala is releasing Eeth and Kit anyway, isn't she?" Obi-Wan raised his eyebrows.
"They're going to be transported to a neutral planet from which they can make their own way back to Coruscant."
Quinlan nodded to himself. I wanted to ask if you'd release them to me. I'm going to give Ayla the Scorpion. She came on a commercial passenger liner before Senate travel sanctions, and doesn't have her own ship here, and... anyway, if she brings Eeth and Kit back with her, it'll go easier for her at the temple. She'll have a hard enough time with Thulm and me both gone. Bringing them back would be a show of good faith."
"Do you think that the Council won't trust Master Sakura?" Ahsoka asked, sounding surprised.
"I wouldn't," Obi-Wan said.
Quinlan grimaced. "So..."
Obi-Wan thought about it for a few moments, but he couldn't get any sense in the Force that Quinlan meant anything other than what he was saying, And his friend was right. They were going to be released anyway. All right, he said at last. It won't be until tomorrow, though. I've got a message I want to send to the Council, and Her Royal Highness probably will too. Are you sure you want to give up your ship? Quinlan shrugged. It's just a ship. I can get another one. He winked at Obi-Wan. You can buy me another one. Taking advantage of a clause in the no possessions part of the code, I see, Obi-Wan said, amused. It's more like a guideline, really, Quinlan said. I'm not attached. Now you almost sound like a good Jedi, Obi-Wan said. They reached the doors to the gymnasium, Obi-Wan swinging a hand over the control panel to open them. Inside, he heard the familiar crackle and hiss of lightsabers, and the three of them stood back for a moment, watching the two unfamiliar Jedi sparring. Luminara and Barriss were both sitting on the bleachers, their attention fixed on Kenobi and Skywalker. Even Rabe had set aside her datapad to watch. Obi-Wan had only caught the tail end of Skywalker's match with Luminara before, and he found himself watching Skywalker instead of Kenobi. The two Jedi were moving almost too fast for the human eye to follow, their lightsabers nothing more than two blue blurs between each other. Obi-Wan could feel the Force humming in the air, the concentrated willpower of two Jedi Knights biting at the edges of his consciousness. This close, there wasn't any question of whether or not Skywalker was a knight. The answer was obvious to anyone with eyes to see or enough Force sensitivity to recognize it. Don't tell me that in another lifetime that boy turned into this man, Obi-Wan thought, crossing his arms over his chest. He leaned against the wall beside the doors, letting the Force guide him along with his eyes. There was a kinesthetic language that made Jedi distinct from other members of their species, one that developed over years of training and which was difficult to conceal. One of the many reasons why Shadow Knights like Quinlan were so rare. The vast majority of Jedi were simply incapable of pretending to be anything other than themselves. Ani Skywalker didn't move like a Jedi. That had been evident even in their brief interaction. But Anakin Skywalker did, with the same fluid grace as any other temple-raised youngling. He and Kenobi were nearly mirrors of each other, each one perfectly countering the other's moves, even though there was no pattern that Obi-Wan could discern. It was the kind of sparring match that could easily go on until one or both of the combatants became too exhausted to continue. The Force help us all if they ever have to fight each other in earnest. Obi-Wan's arrival must have been noted, because a few moments later the match came to a close, both men breathing hard as they deactivated their lightsabers. Skywalker leaned in to grip Kenobi's shoulder, grinning at him and saying something to him in a voice too low for Obi-Wan to catch, though he saw the smile spread over Kenobi's face. He raised his voice. Kenobi. When his counterpart looked over at him, Obi-Wan crooked a finger at him and said, Let's take a walk. Quinlan glanced at him. What are you up to? He said softly. Luminara and Rabe have the details on the reception tomorrow morning, Obi-Wan said, instead of replying. We're coordinating with the palace guard on security. Come up with a plan. Come on. This last was aimed at Kenobi, who had reached him, Skywalker close behind him. Not you. Hey, if
Anakin,
he...
Anakin, it's fine, Kenobi said, his voice overlaying his partner's. I doubt that Captain Kenobi has any ulterior plans to kill me and steal my identity.
Maybe later, Obi-Wan said.
He and Kenobi went back out into the corridor, the doors to the gymnasium sliding shut behind them. They didn't, Obi-Wan noted automatically, have quite the same gait, though he couldn't put his finger on what was different about it. One of Queen Brea's greenhouses was nearby, and Obi-Wan led Kenobi into it, relieved to find that it was empty of all but the gardener droids at the moment. Kenobi had followed him inside without asking any questions, but as the door slid shut and left them in the moist heat of the pseudo-tropical environment,
Obi-Wan was already stripping off his heavy overcoat. He said,
I take it that you have something you want to discuss.
Obi-Wan dropped his overcoat on a nearby bench and tucked his hands behind his belt buckle, considering Kenobi's mild expression. After a moment, he said,
Tell me about Skywalker.
The change was immediate. Kenobi went back on one heel, his shoulders tightening and his gaze narrowing. He didn't reach for his lightsaber, but Obi-Wan felt the sudden sharpness in the Force. He could have the hilt in his hand and the blade ignited before either of them took their next breath. His voice was calm as he said,
Why?
Obi-Wan raised an eyebrow, crossing his arms over his chest.
For one thing, an explanation to that reaction.
Kenobi looked irritated with himself.
Anakin is none of your concern.
I'll be the judge of that. As the other man's mouth tightened, he added,
How does one boy from Tatooine change the course of the galaxy?
Kenobi crossed his arms and glanced aside, his shoulders hunching in a little.
Who told you that?
Her Royal Highness. Please, enlighten me. Kenobi turned away, walked a few paces down the greenhouse path, then came back. Eventually, he said,
When we were running the blockade around Naboo 13 years ago, the Royal Starship was damaged. We couldn't make it back to Coruscant without a new hyperdrive generator. We had to sit down on Tatooine. Qui-Gon went. He found Anakin there. Anakin was very strong in the Force, even as a child. Qui-Gon took him before the Council to be tested, even though he was too old. The Council refused to train him. He came back with us to Naboo. Somehow, during the attack on the palace, he ended up in a starfighter.
For a moment, he smiled.
Anakin is probably the best star pilot in the galaxy, and even as a child, he had a great deal of natural talent. He was responsible for destroying the battle droid control ship. When the Council came to Naboo afterwards, they agreed to let him train as a Jedi.
With a Padawan who hadn't even taken his trials yet?
Kenobi met his eyes. I was knighted in the field. I never took the trials.
Obi-Wan hissed out a curse, fighting back his own indignation.
Lucky you, he managed to say.
Kenobi turned aside again, staring at the riotous purple flowers of the Rodian swamp vine in front of him. He was silent for a few moments, then said,
The Council would not have changed their mind about Anakin just because he was an exceptional pilot. Qui-Gon made me promise that I would train him, and I insisted that he be allowed into the Order. Enough of the Council agreed that I was permitted to take him as my Padawan, though I don't think any of them would have protested if I had changed my mind. Somewhat to everyone's surprise, I'm not sure a single member of the Council thought that he wouldn't wash out sooner or later. It did work out. Anakin's a knight now, and he did take the trials.
Obi-Wan rubbed a hand over his jaw.
Qui-Gon made you promise, he said. It wasn't what he had meant to say, but it was out there now.
Kenobi turned back to him, his expression challenging.
Yes. Why?
I made Qui-Gon a promise, too. He saw Kenobi blink once, slow, before he asked,
What was it?
Something I couldn't keep. Obi-Wan closed the fingers of one hand into a fist, unable to help himself.
Damn you, Qui-Gon. I could do what you asked, or I could do what was right.
It was a familiar ache, but now it felt new and raw, as if an old wound had been ripped open years after it should have been scarred over.
Kenobi eyed him thoughtfully.
Irritated, Obi-Wan leaned back on one foot and said,
So, one untrained boy in the cockpit of an N1, and we could both be calling each other Master Jedi right now, hmm? That's certainly something.
It is, Kenobi agreed cautiously.
Qui-Gon did a lot of things that the Council didn't agree with, Obi-Wan said.
and it still hurt just a little to sling Qui-Gon's name around so casually. But he wouldn't haul a 9-year-old feral back to the temple and think he could make a Jedi out of him, no matter how Force-sensitive he was. Why would he do something like that? What's so special about this boy?
That's hardly any of your concern. I'm making it mine, Obi-Wan said.
What harm is it going to do? You're just going to make it look worse for him.
Obi-Wan was silent for a long moment. His arms were still crossed. His shoulders hunched a little, defensively. At last, he glanced aside and said, Qui-Gon believed that Anakin might be the Chosen One. Obi-Wan blinked.
The Chosen what?
If he hadn't been dragging half-forgotten Jedi philosophy out of the dark recesses of his memory all morning, he might not have remembered it at all. Then he realized what Kenobi had to be talking about.
What, the great Jedi hope that's supposed to bring balance to the Force? That's a fairy tale. No one believes that.
Qui-Gon did. Kenobi's mouth tightened.
Obi-Wan shook his head and turned away, walking to the end of the path before coming back.
Well, is it true?
Kenobi shrugged.
Anakin's a very talented Jedi.
Every Jedi is talented. We wouldn't be Jedi if we weren't. You know that's not what I was asking.
Kenobi rubbed at his forehead with one hand.
I don't know. I've never let myself think about it like that. I don't think I could have trained him if I had.
Obi-Wan shook his head again.
It's a fairy tale. Maybe it was a prophecy once, but that was millennia ago, before there was a Jedi Order. Even Qui-Gon wouldn't believe that.
He did.
Kenobi considered him, then said,
You've met Ani.
Obi-Wan swung around to stare at him.
Blasted Jedi intuition.
Kenobi smiled.
I didn't need to be a Jedi to guess that one.
Obi-Wan snorted.
So here we are. A Queen of Naboo, a Galactic Senator, a Grey Jedi, a Jedi Master, a Feral Smuggler, and a Jedi Knight. What are we to make of this?
I was rather hoping to leave that up to the Force, Kenobi said, raising his eyebrows. He relaxed infinitesimally, settling back on his heels.
You're calling yourself a Jedi now.
Well, apparently, Obi-Wan said, between the two of us, I'm the only one who actually passed the trials. That ought to count for something.
The ruined doors of the palace throne room had been removed entirely, along with the bodies of men and women who had died there. Stas could still sense the charnel house that had been not that long ago. But Admiral Tarkin, force-blind as he was, didn't seem to be particularly bothered by it. It also struck her as being in rather poor taste, but if she untangled her emotional reaction to the situation, she could understand why Tarkin had taken it over as his headquarters. There were armored clone troopers standing on either side of the empty space where the doors had been. As Stas and Agen approached, she could hear the sound of voices inside, one of which had the slightly hollow quality she associated with holograms. Agen's mouth had gone tight. He didn't like Tarkin using the throne room any more than she did. She recognized the being in the hologram as they went in. It was Pong Krell, a Besalisk Jedi a few years older than Stas herself, who had been assigned to the invasion force targeting the Lake Country. Tarkin was sitting behind the Queen's desk in the tall-backed chair he had replaced the throne with, listening to his report with a neutral expression.
Secured the district, though there are still guerrilla attacks being launched from locations we haven't yet been able to identify, even with satellite imagery,
Krell was saying.
The combatants do seem to be Naboo regulars in civilian clothing, according to survivors.
Increase your search efforts, General Krell, Admiral Tarkin said. He flicked a glance at Stas and Agen as they went quietly to one side of his desk and waited. They must have been in the holoprojector's pickup range, because Krell sketched a bow in their direction.
I want those insurgents found and eliminated. Insurgent seems like a rather strong word, Admiral, Agen said.
I see no reason to call them anything other than what they are, said Tarkin. By now they must be aware that this planet is no longer under the control of the indigenous government. Further resistance on the Naboo's part is an act of treason against the Republic.
A fact of which they are undoubtedly aware, Agen said dryly. The Naboo fight to defend their homeworld.
Their homeworld is no longer theirs to defend, Tarkin said. This ongoing attempt to do so is an exercise in futility, and one that I intend to be fatal.
Agen and Stas glanced at each other, Stas folding her hands into fists without meaning to, and glad that the long sleeves of her cloak hid the gesture. From halfway across the continent, Pong Krell looked a little concerned, though given the muck of the force in the room it was hard to tell what he thought of it. Stas wondered suddenly if Tarkin had realized how badly distorted the force was in this room, if he realized it would put the Jedi at a disadvantage. She wouldn't put it past him. After a moment, Krell went on with his report.
We've also apprehended the Naberi family, Queen Amidala's parents and her sister and her family. They've been taken into custody.
Good, Tarkin said. Very good. I want the Naberis brought to Theed immediately. Perhaps this will lure Queen Amidala out of hiding. Make sure that they are questioned regarding her whereabouts.
If Queen Amidala isn't on world, then a threat to her family won't reach her, not with the Holonet down, Stas pointed out.
The Supreme Chancellor will not maintain the Holonet outage for much longer, Tarkin said. Its use has long passed. No matter where Amidala is, whether she is on this world or some other, she will soon be forced to reveal herself.
He looked back at Krell.
Make sure that the escort on the Naberi family is more than sufficient. I have no doubt that if word gets out regarding their arrest, these insurgents will make some ill-advised attempt to rescue them.
Krell nodded, and a moment later the hologram blinked out. Tarkin turned toward Stas and Agen. Just as he opened his mouth to speak, there was a burst of blaster fire in the distance, though still too close for comfort.
I take it that the situation in the city hasn't stabilized, he observed.
No, Stas had to admit. She'd spent all morning trying to clear one residential neighborhood on the edge of the industrial district, and was still feeling singed and a little concussed from the experience. There had been snipers all along the rooftops, and two speeder bombs they hadn't detected until it was too late. Stas could still smell the phantom scent of smoke and burning flesh, even though she had showered twice since returning to the palace. Half of the city has yet to be cleared by Republic troops, and about a third of what has been cleared has already been reoccupied by Naboo forces. We haven't been able to determine yet whether they're regulars, reserves, or armed civilians.
As far as I am concerned, no one with a weapon should or will be considered a civilian, Tarkin said. Whether it is a clone trooper with a blaster cannon or a child with a rock, anyone who threatens or attempts to harm Republic forces will be summarily punished as an enemy combatant.
Stas felt her jaw drop. Admiral, you can't be serious.
You were in the city today, General Alley. Tell me, how many casualties did your squadron take?
Stas's mouth tightened. She didn't look at Agen, but even through the murk in the forest, she could feel his tension.
2 dead, 4 wounded, she said finally. Snipers had accounted for both clone troopers who had been killed, while the speeder bombs had done for the others. One of the troopers who had been injured in the first blast probably wouldn't make it until morning, according to the medic she had left him with.
You see, these rebel are a threat to the Republic. Oh, they may seem like little more than a nuisance now, but mark my words, General, if these attacks are allowed to continue without being checked, then there will be consequences. The Naboo must learn their place in the galaxy.
The Supreme Chancellor will not agree to this, Agen said.
Chancellor Dooku trusts my judgment, General Kolar. It would be wise for you to do the same.
We'll see about that, said Aegon.
Bowing to pressure from the rest of the Senate, and over the objections of the Jedi Council, Dooku had placed Tarkin in charge of the entire operation. Wilhuff Tarkin wasn't particularly popular among those Jedi who had been forced to deal with him in the past. When she had heard that he was assigned to the invasion force, a knight called Bolter Swan had almost refused to come at all. But he had a certain standing in the Senate that had placed him above more agreeable candidates. This, though, would be beyond the pale for a former Jedi Master like Dooku. Stas hoped so, at least. She hadn't known Dooku when he had still been a Jedi, but no Jedi would ever agree to the terms that Tarkin had just proposed.
Indeed, Tarkin said. We shall.
He tapped a control on the desk, pulling up a holomap of the city.
These are the known insurgent attacks over the past week.
Minus the palace and the remains of the guard base, the entire map lit up red. Stas and Aegon glanced at each other.
Most of these attacks have been aimless and disorganized. Some of them, however, have been cleanly executed, with a certain level of professionalism that the others lack.
All but a dozen of the red dots vanished. Stas stepped forward to see better, intrigued despite herself. She and Aegon hadn't had much to do with the city so far. This morning had only been the second time that she had been on the city patrol, since otherwise she had been busy in the palace.
These aren't random, Aegon said from beside her. They're all aimed at where they'll do the most damage to the invasion force.
He pointed at one red dot.
I remember this one. Master Het told me about it. His troop was bringing in a load of prisoners captured at one of the black bases in the River Delta. Asherad said it must have been random, because no one outside of that troop and a few members of the command staff knew it was happening.
Unless it was not random, Tarkin said. Half of these attacks were aimed at convoys or units that were not publicly known to be in the areas where they were attacked. Once, perhaps, I might call luck, but a half a dozen is conspiracy.
You think that there's a Naboo spy somewhere in the task force? Stas said reluctantly.
She didn't like the idea, but it wasn't impossible. The invasion force was so many disparate groups of people who had been thrown together too quickly for anyone's comfort. She would bet her life that the Jedi were trustworthy, but...
Would you?
Would you really bet your life that the Jedi are trustworthy? After everything you've seen?
Force helper. Some days Stas didn't know what to believe anymore.
Precisely, said Tarkin. My technical analysts tell me that someone accessed the palace computer mainframe well after the palace had already been secured. Whatever they accessed was immediately erased. Whoever did this is, I believe, our spy.
Stas stopped breathing for a moment.
It was on the tip of her tongue to say, no, this is a mistake, that was me. But before she could, Aegon said, surely any spy among our ranks would have informed the Naboo before our arrival. The Naboo were taken completely off guard.
The holonet outage made that impossible, Tarkin pointed out.
He eyed them both with barely concealed distaste for a moment, then aloud.
Indications are that there is at least one cell of insurgents operating out of one of the uncleared areas of the city, almost certainly being supplied with information from inside this palace. I want you to find that cell, and then I want you to take their leaders alive if possible and kill the rest. I intend to make a public example of them.
What about the spy? Stas managed to say.
I will deal with the spy personally, Tarkin said.
He made a gesture of dismissal.
Find me that insurgent cell, generals.
Aegon and Stas bowed and left the throne room. They went down the corridor until they were out of earshot of the clone troopers. Then Aegon caught her arm and said urgently,
Stas,
How did you know about the neural implants in the clones?
Stas shook her head.
It's complicated.
This looks bad, Stas.
Well, I didn't see you telling Admiral Tarkin about it, she pointed out.
He shook his head.
Stas, I'm not informing to the Naboo, Agen, she told him. You know that.
Agen started to reply, then hesitated.
I know that you admire Queen Amidala, he said finally. And you and Obi-Wan were in the same cohort as younglings, that you were friends. If you've been in contact with him since...
Stas slapped him so hard that it snapped his head around.
How dare you!
Agen stepped back from her, rubbing at his cheek.
Then give me an explanation, Stas. Tell me how you knew about the neural implants.
Stas gritted her teeth, but telling him why would involve letting him know that she had spoken to and released one of Queen Amidala's handmaidens. There was no excuse for that.
I can't.
For the love of the Force, Agen, you're just going to have to trust me, Stas said. If you can't do that, after all these years...
He caught at her arm again.
This is a dangerous game you're playing. There are forces at work here that we don't understand. Doubting the Council is one thing, but working with the Naboo? Jedi died in those attacks, Stas.
I had nothing to do with that.
A pair of clone troopers passing by gave them curious looks, and Stas lowered her voice.
On my oath as a Jedi Knight, I had nothing to do with that. I haven't been passing information to the Naboo, I swear to you.
Then how did you know about those implants?
I can't tell you that, Stas said. Not yet. I need more answers first. I need...
Realization struck her, and she blinked before looking up at Agen. I need to speak to the Naboo.
Agen threw up his hands. That's the last thing you need to do.
It's the only way, Stas said. She bit her lip and added,
and I think I know how to do it.
Master, a question?
Yes, Padawan? Luminara said, looking down at Barriss. Her apprentice's face was scrunched up a little in thought. Her eyes narrowed, and the diamonds across her nose and cheeks shifted a little because of it. Barriss paused before answering, taking the time to properly articulate the question the way she had been taught, instead of just blurting it out the way Luminara probably would have done at the same age.
Why does the Queen trust us? She said at last.
She doesn't have to. And everyone knows that you can't trust Jedi who have resigned the Order, not really.
She let the words trail off, looking down at her hands.
I doubt that Queen Amidala shares that belief, Luminara pointed out. She was aware that Quinlan and Ahsoka had stopped what they were doing to listen, both of them looking up from the holographic plans of the ballroom where Queen Brea was holding the reception. Given who and what her husband is.
But Captain Kenobi is different, Barriss said. I mean, she knew him when he resigned. They were already...
She stumbled for a moment over the words, then compromised.
Involved.
Quinlan mumbled something that sounded suspiciously like screwing like Pika kits. But when Luminara glared at him, he just raised his eyebrows, affecting an innocent expression.
Well, you tell me, Padawan, Luminara said, resisting the urge to roll her eyes at him. Why would the Queen trust us? And why do you think that she does?
Barriss looked surprised.
We're not locked up, not like Master Koth and Master Fisto still are. And she let us keep our lightsabers. And we're doing this.
She gestured at the hollow with one hand.
She wouldn't do that if she didn't trust us, would she?
All right, Luminara said. That's an answer to one question. What about the other one?
That's what I asked you, Barriss protested.
Luminara raised an eyebrow.
I know.
Barriss sighed, then wrinkled her nose, thinking.
Well, Captain Kenobi vouched for us, she said eventually.
She trusts him. And he knows you and Master Quinlan, even though you attacked the Queen. Yes, I remember. Luminara rested a hand on her bad knee without thinking about it.
It still ached. She shouldn't have pushed herself so hard while sparring, not against a Jedi Knight she had never faced before.
Skywalker was a better duelist than she had expected him to be. She had gotten the impression during the match that he had been pulling some of his blows, and irritation at being catered to had made her a little more reckless than she should have been, considering her still-healing injury.
Do you really think that's a basis for trust, Padawan?
I don't know what you talked about when you went to see Queen Amidala and Captain Kenobi, Barriss said, sounding a little hopeful.
And that will remain between the three of us, Luminara said. Make your hypothesis based off what you know, not what you can guess.
Barriss sighed.
I don't know, Master. It doesn't make any sense, especially since there are going to be so many important people there. If I was Queen Amidala, I wouldn't take the risk that one of us was lying about coming over. I mean, Master Quinn is a shadow.
Thanks for the vote of confidence, Padawan, Quinlan said dryly.
I didn't mean it like... He waved that off.
That's fine. I know what you meant.
He glanced at Ahsoka, who had been listening with her brows furrowed in concentration.
Well, what do you think, Ahsoka? I know Obi-Wan talked about it with you.
Ahsoka hesitated, then said, He said that it's not a bodyguard detail, not really. Obviously, if someone tries to hurt the Queen, we're supposed to stop them, but he's going to be with her the entire time, so he'll probably be able to react more quickly anyway. The Queen wants us there so that we're, well, on display.
On display? Barriss repeated.
Why?
Realization dawned on her face.
There aren't any Jedi in the Confederacy. No one else has gone over to the Separatists. And since everyone at the reception isn't sure whether or not they want to stay in the Confederacy, she wants to show us off. To say that even the Jedi are losing faith in the Republic.
Luminara nodded.
And we're being tested, of course. We probably will be for a while.
She sighed, rubbing her fingers over her knee.
It wasn't as though she blamed Obi-Wan and Queen Amidala for being wary. Under the circumstances, she probably would have done the same.
Well, under the circumstances, she might have been even warier. Obi-Wan was showing a lot of trust in putting all four of them on the floor with the delegates, instead of putting them in the balcony like he was doing Kenobi and Skywalker, who couldn't be seen on the floor anyway.
Barriss sighed.
I wish we weren't doing this.
Ahsoka straightened and stared at her.
What? Why?
Barriss plucked at the fabric of her skirt.
It just doesn't feel right, she said. I don't know. I know that Queen Amidala is right and the Republic is failing, but using us like this against the Republic, it just feels wrong. Jedi aren't supposed to do this.
Jedi aren't supposed to do a lot of things, Quinlan said, leaning back in his seat. We do them anyway.
He pushed a hand back through his dreadlocks.
If it helps, Luminara and I will probably catch the bulk of it, since we're both knights. You're both clearly apprentices. You're not going to get it so hard.
Though you should be prepared for it, Luminara felt compelled to add.
She wasn't particularly looking forward to the experience herself, but she understood the necessity.
You've made your bed. Now you have to lie in it, Master Unduli.
She had seen Queen Amidala's broadcasts. She had done enough work with the Supreme Chancellor and various members of the Senate to know that all of Amidala's protests were grounded in fact. The Republic was corrupt. It was failing. The Jedi were supposed to defend the Republic, but ever since Naboo, Luminara still wasn't sure what she would have done if she and Eeth had actually succeeded in completing their last mission. She knew that she had been picked for the mission because she had a history with Obi-Wan, despite the fact that before then, they hadn't spoken in more than 5 years. Whatever the Council had hoped to accomplish, well, it was done with now. She sighed and stood up, catching Quinlan's eye as she did so. "I'm going to go lie down for a few hours," she said, when Barriss raised her head, radiating concern in the Force. "It's nothing to be concerned with, Padawan. I'm just tired." "All right, Master," Barriss said after a moment. Luminara left them in the sitting room as she went to her bedroom, settling down cross-legged on the bed. Quinlan came in a few minutes later, waving a hand at the door's control panel to lock it against prying Padawans. "I'm pretty sure the kids think we're having sex right now," he said, sitting down beside her and pulling his legs up. "What is it? Having second thoughts?" "No," Luminara said. "And that is what's bothering me." She sighed. "Barriss is. I know her well enough that it's obvious to me. I don't want to force her into this, Quinn, not if she doesn't think it's the right decision."
"But you think it is?"
"More so with every moment. But that's me, not her. I can't make this decision for her. If she wants to go back to Coruscant, to the Order, I don't want her to stay just because I am, or because she thinks that the Council will hurt her if she doesn't. Fear is not the proper basis for this kind of decision, and fear is what's driving Barriss now." She met Quinlan's concerned gaze. "You were there during Obi-Wan's trial. Do you think the Council will punish her for this?" He rested his hands on his knees.
"I don't know, Luminara. I really don't.
Barriss is a good kid with a spotless record. She's no Obi-Wan Kenobi. They're not going to use Revan's cure on her, if that's what you're worried about. Not on a Padawan who's never even done anything worth getting written up for before. Even Yoda couldn't make that one fly." "There are things other than Revan's cure the Council can punish a Jedi with," Luminara pointed out. She pulled her knees up to her chest and wrapped her arms around them, tipping her cheek against her knees as she turned to look at Quinlan. He shook his head. "She's a Padawan who went after her master. We don't reward that kind of behavior, but it's a slap on the wrist at most. Everyone does it at least once, if and when the situation comes up. I did. Obi-Wan did. You did." Luminara raised an eyebrow, though she remembered the situation in question very well. Quinlan knew that. In her defense, she hadn't been a Padawan then. "We're not supposed to."
"Like I said, we're not supposed to do a lot of things. But here we are."
"Here we are," Luminara repeated. She rubbed the side of her thumb over the brooch at her throat. "How did it come to this? All those years, and it's going to end like this."
"What's going to end?" He rested a hand on her shoulder. "The Order? The Order's not going to fall. The Republic? We're Jedi, we..."
"The Republic's going to fall, Quinn. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but the Republic will fall. What it is right now, no one can sustain that." Luminara shut her eyes. "The Republic is not what it was meant to be. Neither are the Jedi."
Quinlan squeezed her shoulder.
"Forget the Republic. Do you know what I kept thinking when I was on Naboo?" she asked him, glancing up.
"My knee really hurts," he mocked, with gentle good humor.
She punched him in the arm. "Besides that..." He smiled, then said,
"No."
"I kept thinking about Obi-Wan on Naboo all those years ago," Luminara said. "Naboo spent a year under military occupation and blockade. The Order didn't hear from him for 7 months. And once we did,
We did nothing. No wonder he resigned. How can you keep your faith when you've been abandoned? We left him there.
And then we did it again with you and Eeth, Quinlan said slowly, realization dawning in his eyes. 2 days ago, I would have said, Stang, I did say, that you were the last Jedi in the Order to do something like this.
Oh, you and Obi-Wan were talking about me, were you? Luminara raised her eyebrows.
Ahsoka and I were talking about Barriss, he corrected. I thought you wouldn't take her showing up very well.
Luminara shrugged. I'm not happy about it, if that's what you were wondering. And if she hadn't come, I might not have made this decision. But it is the right decision. For me.
She shook her head.
You remember what it was like back during the occupation, before we knew what had happened.
Yeah, Quinlan said.
Luminara had taken her trials during the occupation, as had two other Jedi in their cohort, Stas Alley and Rig Nima. Obi-Wan's absence had been glaring, especially since a few days after Luminara had been knighted, Bail Organa had come back from his mercy mission to Naboo with a message from him. What Obi-Wan had said had never been publicly released to the body of the Order, but it was commonly known that he had confirmed Qui-Gon Jinn's death and, more importantly, that he had asked for the Order to send reinforcements to end the Federation occupation. The Council hadn't even offered to extract him. They had let the Senate hobble the Order. They had left one Jedi to die, and another to suffer until he broke. And maybe Obi-Wan hadn't broken the way anyone had expected, but he had broken. Luminara touched her lightsaber hilt, the one Obi-Wan had given back to her. I know that we can't know what was going on in the Council Chamber then, but this isn't 13 years ago. They should have known better than to make the same decision twice.
Yeah, Quinlan said again. They probably should have.
I know Eeth doesn't feel the same way, Luminara said slowly. But he was already on the council then. He didn't take his trials with that hanging over him. Knowing that no matter how good you are, whether or not you're the best Padawan in the Order, whether you've already tapped for the High Council, nothing... that sometimes the Order will fail you, that they'll leave you behind, that they'll choose political expediency over what's right. You and I did.
I was already a knight when Obi-Wan went to Naboo, Quinlan pointed out.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he said after a moment. Yeah, I do.
His gaze flicked up to the ceiling.
Sometimes I wonder what the Order would be like without that hanging over us.
He blinked.
I guess there is someone I could ask about that.
This is true. She sighed and straightened her legs, letting her feet rest on the carpeted floor. Have you talked to them at all? It's disconcerting.
That's one way to put it.
Quinlan flopped onto his back, passing a hand over his eyes.
Did they tell you about Barriss?
Kenobi asked about her before, but he didn't say that. Luminara considered. I think he was trying to be kind, but he did tell me when I asked him today.
Quinlan nodded to himself. I heard he and Obi-Wan got into it. Who won?
It was a draw. He was also very, very impressive, she had to concede. I think Kenobi's actually the better duelist, and of course he's a master, but it was very close.
Huh. Quinlan didn't say anything for a few minutes. What are you going to do about Barriss? He said at last.
I don't know, Luminara said. I just
don't know. I'm not going to send her away. It's not fair to her. It is her choice, even if I think it's the wrong one. I'm her master. That doesn't give me the right to take that choice away from her. She sighed and lay back next to Quinlan, staring up at the ceiling. We're not coming back from this, you know. The Council will forgive a lot of things, but it won't forgive this.
I know.
He groped blindly for her hand and caught it. Luminara wrapped her fingers around his, glad for the company.
Jedi weren't meant to be alone.
Do the girls know?
Ahsoka does. I'm not sure if Barriss has figured it out yet. You know her better than I do.
He was quiet for a moment, then said,
Ayla was right. The Jedi are already in this war. Sooner or later, we'll be facing our brothers and sisters across the battlefield.
I'm trying not to think about that, Luminara said.
Yeah, Quinlan said. So am I.
Lightsabers sparked and clashed in the otherwise stygian darkness of the training cell, briefly illuminating the faces of the duelists in thin flashes of blue and green light. As the door to the outer corridor slid open, one of the duelists looked over, distracted by the motion and the sudden light. His opponent took advantage of the opening created to swat him lightly with the powered down blade of her lightsaber. Focus, Padawan, she chided as he rubbed at his arm. More clearly, she added, Lights at 30%. As the ambient light in the cell rose to a dim glow, Mace let the door close behind him and stepped forward. His former apprentice deactivated her training saber and handed it to her Padawan before coming over to greet him.
I heard that the courier had arrived from Naboo, Deepa Balaba said. We've got her. Mace shook his head. It was one of her decoys that was killed, not Amidala herself. The news is odd.
He frowned, trying to put into words the nagging feeling of wrongness he'd gotten in the Force when the courier had given her report. Boltar Swan had been worryingly vague in her description. She had also said herself that she hadn't seen the body, and there hadn't been a direct message included from the knights who had. Deepa crossed her arms across her chest, frowning.
What do you mean? I'm not sure.
He glanced over her shoulder at her Padawan, who had the fixed expression on his face of someone who knew he shouldn't be listening but was doing so anyway.
I think there's something happening on Naboo that no one wants us to know about. I just can't work out who's behind it. Dooku? Mace had thought about that. Maybe, but that doesn't feel right. No, it's something elsewhere. Elusive.
He shook his head. Deepa watched his face, then turned and said, Caleb, why don't you go get three of the training remotes from the Master-at-Arms?
Three?
Her Padawan protested, looking alarmed. He was a human boy of about 14 years old, with amber-colored skin and dark brown hair, currently sweat-streaked from exertion. He pushed it absently back from his face, flicking his braid aside with a practiced motion.
I think you're ready for it.
She made a shooing gesture with one hand.
Go on, I'll be here.
Sighing, her apprentice hooked both training lightsabers to his belt and trotted off, casting a longing look at them before disappearing out into the corridor. Mace waited until the door had slid closed again before he said, I need you to do something for me after this next council meeting.
Of course.
Deepa stepped over to the padded bench against the wall, where her and her apprentice's cloaks and their regular lightsabers had been left, and sat down. Mace followed her.
I need you to go to Naboo and find out what's going on. Dooku's going to put the holonet back up, but I'd rather have eyes on the ground that I can trust.
There are over 200 Jedi in the invasion force, Deepa pointed out. The subtext was obvious. If Mace couldn't trust another Jedi, then who could he trust? The only two people you can trust at a time like this.
your master, and your Padawan.
Except his former master had vanished without a word of explanation, and that only left him with one option. At least it was a good one.
The knights in the invasion force are spread out over the entire planet, Mace said, and they've all got duties of their own anyway. I want someone with fresh eyes and no other obligations.
You know I'm not a shadow.
I don't want a shadow.
And I can't trust a blasted thing any one of them says, not with Thulm gone.
Obi-Wan's escape wasn't common knowledge, even among the High Council. There were fewer than half a dozen people who knew that he wasn't the only Jedi who had gone missing then. Deepa wasn't one of them. Mace fingered the fabric of one of his sleeves.
Go as yourself. Take your Padawan. He could use the experience. Find out what's been going on that planet since the Holonet went down. It's clear that we can't trust our agent on world.
And Admiral Tarkin was a political appointment.
And there's that.
Mace had met Tarkin personally before. He knew the man was effective, but some of his methods... call it Jedi squeamishness or call it compassion, but there were some things that he suggested that any good Jedi would rather die than carry out.
Deepa nodded.
Caleb will like having a mission, she said. He's been going stir-crazy during the lockdown, and to be honest, so have I. She leaned back against the wall, interlacing her fingers together, and added,
Master, there have been rumors...
That's because all the Jedi ever do is gossip, Mace said dryly.
She smiled, acknowledging the truth of the words. Then her smile fell away.
There have been rumors about Captain Kenobi, she said. Everyone knows that he passed the trials. The fact that no one has seen him since... People are talking.
Yoda and the Dark Woman didn't spirit him off to strip him while our backs were turned, if that's what you're asking, Mace said.
There had always been factions in the Order, but Obi-Wan's trial had drawn the lines more sharply than Mace had seen them in all his years in the Order. It hadn't yet gone so far that there were ignited lightsabers in the Council Chamber, but there hadn't been a full meeting since the vote.
Force help us, let it not come to that.
If it came to that, it would be the end of the Order.
It might already be the end of the Order, and they just didn't know it yet.
He rubbed a hand over his forehead, troubled, and caught Deepa's worried look.
Obi-Wan will keep, he said. Something might happen in the next council meeting. Something will happen in the next council meeting. I don't know what yet, but it will happen. When it does,
he met her eyes, narrowed a little in concern.
I won't tell you to follow my lead, because that isn't fair to either of us. You must do as you feel is best, of course. For yourself and your Padawan.
Deepa's gaze flicked to the door that her apprentice had left through.
Is it bad? She asked him. As bad as Revan's cure?
It could be, Mace said. The door slid open, letting in the bright light from the corridor and Deepa's young apprentice, who was carrying one of the training remotes and being trailed by the other two, which floated in the air behind him. Mace and Deepa stood up in unison.
We'll speak later, he told her.
Of course. Her expressive eyes were worried as she stepped over to her apprentice and took the training remote from him. Caleb Doom looked between the two masters, picking up on some of their agitation. He was very sensitive, even for a Jedi Padawan. Mace had thought that he was a good choice for Deepa's first apprentice.
May the Force be with you both, Mace said, and left them together.
Padme came back from the last of the Queen's conferences for the day, exhausted and heartsick. After the meeting with Duchess Satine, Queen Amidala had had more than a dozen other meetings with various planetary representatives, either one-on-one, with their various retinues, or in small groups, sometimes proctored by the Organas. After the handful of representatives who were uncomfortable with Jedi, Captain Kenobi had joined them again, Padme would have been more interested in watching them work together, coaxing and persuading and occasionally threatening, if it hadn't been for what they were trying to do. Padme loved the Republic. She understood that it was badly flawed, but she couldn't believe that it had been beyond repair even before Palpatine had given his final order. Maybe it still wasn't. It had been nothing once, centuries ago. It could be built again anew, and built right this time, if she could only get home. She had to stop and lean against the nearest wall, putting a hand over her face. This wasn't her Republic, but it was still crumbling in front of her eyes. And worse, Padme Amidala was the one pulling it down. Back on Naboo, it had all seemed distant and theoretical, but here on Alderaan, Padme was suddenly confronted with people that she knew very well, all of whom had been loyal to the Republic in her own world. In this one, they were anything but, or they wouldn't have been here. If they had been separatists in her own world, Padme was certain that she wouldn't be half as bothered as she was right now. But the thing was that they weren't separatists. People like Bail Organa and Mon Mothma, Satine Kryze and Bana Brimu, Padme knew personally everyone that the Queen had met with today, had sat with them in the Senate, had debated with them in committee, had drank and laughed and plotted with them at innumerable parties and dinners and lobby meetings. Seeing them here, listening to them calmly debate the breaking of the Republic, it came very close to being too much for her to bear. Padme had wanted to scream at them to open their eyes and look at what they were doing, what effect it would have on the Republic, on the galaxy. But somehow she had managed to hold her tongue. It wasn't her galaxy. She couldn't pretend to know what damage the Republic and the Senate had done to the representatives of the systems meeting with Queen Amidala. Padme knew only too well that the Republic could hurt people even when it wasn't meaning to, but it was still hard to take. She hadn't been certain that she would be able to last out the day. She had been glad when it had ended, and the Queen had dismissed her handmaidens. "Miss, are you all right?" She looked up at a young Alderaanian teenager dressed in a page's uniform, who was hovering nearby and carrying a covered tray. Padme forced herself to smile in response and say, "Yes, I'm sorry. I was just thinking." "Should I get someone, miss? Or..." "No, I'm fine. Thank you." She waited before the page had gone, before straightening up, smoothing her hands over the heavy silks of her handmaiden's cloak. Their rooms were just around the corner, without any guards this time. Padme tapped in the code lock for the door and slipped inside, hoping that Anakin and Obi-Wan had already returned from whatever they had spent the day doing. They were. They were both on one of the half-moon couches, Obi-Wan sitting upright, and Anakin stretched out with his head on Obi-Wan's thigh, turned a little to frown at the hologram they had been looking at. As Padme came in, Obi-Wan leaned forward to shut it off, but not before she saw that it was a representation of the ballroom that the Queen's reception would be held in tomorrow morning. "Hey," Anakin said, pushing himself upright before getting to his feet. "You look tired. Are you..." Before she could think better of it, Padme took 5 fast steps across the room and pulled him down into a kiss, folding her fingers hard into the hair at the back of his neck. Anakin made a surprised sound against her lips, but his mouth was already opening for the kiss, his hands settling familiarly against her waist. She had spent the entire day trying not to rage at someone else's war. She wanted something of her own for a change, something that she hadn't had to watch Queen Amidala smear into the mud. "Padme," Anakin managed, as she pulled back from him to gasp for breath. "What?" Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Obi-Wan starting to get to his feet, looking like he meant to leave as quietly as possible. "No," Padme said, her voice harsh and a little strained even to her ears, and he froze.
She felt Anakin go still against her, his breath catching in his throat. There was something dark and familiar in his eyes, and Padme liked it. "Come here." Obi-Wan still hesitated, leaning back a little on one foot. Then Anakin flashed a bright, hopeful grin at him and said, "Yeah, Obi-Wan, come here." Padme saw the corner of his mouth quirk up in a smirk. Then he crossed over to them, Padme already reaching out to draw him down. Obi-Wan cupped one hand around the back of her neck, his thumb brushing over her jaw, and kissed her warmly, his beard brushing against the corners of her mouth. Anakin, watching, drew in a sharp breath. Padme felt him shift, one hand sliding up to splay across her belly, a familiar pressure even through the panels of her bodice and the layers of her gown and undergowns. Obi-Wan pulled back eventually, his hand lingering on her neck before he let it drop. Padme smiled up at him, liking the gleam in his eyes, then felt her cheeks heat as Anakin said roughly, "Do that again." "No." Padme turned in the circle of his arms and flattened her palms against his chest. She could feel his heart beating beneath the thick fabric of his shirt. His pulse was racing. "You first." Anakin's cheeks were flushed, and there was a wild, almost feverish brightness in his eyes. He dropped a kiss on her forehead, then leaned around her to close a hand in the front of Obi-Wan's shirt and pull him in, though Obi-Wan didn't seem to need much persuasion. Padme ducked under Anakin's arm so that she could watch them, the sharp pant of her own breath tearing at her throat. Time seemed to be moving in fits and starts. Everything around her felt slightly unreal, muted. They were the two most beautiful men she knew, and she shouldn't have been surprised that they were beautiful together, but somehow it still took her breath away. She reached up to fumble with the clasp on her handmaiden's cloak, eventually getting it open so that she could sling the heavy folds of fabric in the general direction of the couch. She couldn't seem to get her own hands under control. It took her a few moments to find the silver buckles at the inner elbows of her outer sleeves, barely able to get her thumbnail under them to flip them open. She was cursing the overcomplicated layers of Naboo fashion by the time Anakin and Obi-Wan came over to help, though Anakin seemed more interested in kissing her than actually getting her out of her gown. Obi-Wan's hands were both quick and clever on the nearly invisible fastenings of both her outer and undergowns. Padme realized, with what shouldn't have been a shock, that she wasn't the first woman he had ever undressed, and had to fight the urge to laugh. "What?" Anakin mumbled against her mouth, pulling back a little a moment later. He was still flushed, and the collar of his shirt had come open. Padme vaguely remembered pulling at it. "Nothing," she said, managing to stifle a giggle, which turned into a gasp as Obi-Wan nipped lightly at the skin behind her ear. "What was that?" he murmured. Padme turned and kissed him, then pushed him gently away so that she had the space to wriggle out of her gown. She let the overgown drop to the floor around her feet, then pulled the undergown off over her head, shivering a little as the cool air in the suite pierced the thin silk of her shift. She glanced up to find both Anakin and Obi-Wan looking at her. Padme started to reach for the collar of her shift, then paused. "I'm starting to feel a little exposed," she said gently. Anakin almost tripped over his own feet in his hurry to get his shirt off. Obi-Wan caught him automatically and studied him, his gaze still fixed on Padme. She smiled, lightheaded and a little dizzy with the thrill of it. She was a beautiful woman, she knew, and she had had men look at her and want her for a long time now. But it was different when it was men that she actually wanted to look at her. And Obi-Wan was the kind of man who didn't look unless it was offered. He let go of Anakin and started to unbutton his own shirt. "There is," he pointed out, his voice low enough that Padme shivered. "A bed." Anakin stopped what he was doing to stare at him. Padme could hear his breath rasping out in the near silence of the room. He was still flushed, his eyes wide and dark, and she found herself wondering what was going through his head, or indeed, through Obi-Wan's. They had never talked about any of this, not really. Yes, Padme wanted them. She knew they wanted her, and she thought they wanted each other, too. But she knew that what would be taken for granted by another Naboo might be completely alien to one Jedi, let alone two of them. The moment dragged out. Then Anakin said roughly, "Yeah, that... let's..." He trailed off, throwing a helpless glance at Padme, and she stifled a laugh before stepping forward to kiss him. His arms went round her automatically. She curved one hand over the back of his neck to pull his head down to her, then released him and turned to Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan moved in to kiss her, his hands careful on her waist. Anakin wrapped his arms around her from behind, nuzzling at her shoulder. When Obi-Wan broke the kiss, Padme smiled up at him, reaching back with one hand to touch Anakin's hair. "Yes," she said. "Let's go to bed."